This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. I am grateful for your company on this Sunday afternoon. Former Secretary of State and Democratic candidate for President Hillary Clinton has been a leader for women's rights around the world for years. And she paid a visit to Charlottesville last week as part of a global women's conference. WMRA's Marguerite Gallerini was there. We also have a look at the growing pains and plans to manage them along Charlottesville's busy West Main Street in Peter Jump's first report for us. And we dip into the archives for a look at the artwork that some refugees were creating to tell their stories. That's from last year in Charlottesville. But first, November 7th marked 1 year since the death of singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen. On Veterans Day in Harrisonburg, a tribute to Cohen sold out Pale Fire Brewing Company. Proceeds benefited a Harrisonburg-based nonprofit called War Paints, which showcases and sells creative and artistic products by veterans and first responders. The tribute featured Trent Wagler of the Steel Wheels with Derek Kratzer and a number of local musicians. WMRA's Christopher Clymer-Kurtz attended and filed this audio tapestry.
Trent Wagler of the Steel Wheels began the evening with Leonard Cohen's minute prologue.
I've been listening to all the dissension. I've been listening to all the pain.
Diane Moore.
Oh, I love Leonard Cohen. Woke up yesterday thinking of his music. It just touches my heart in a way a few composers do.
Yes, I think.
Chris Howdyshaw, Christian Parrott, and Bruce Johnson sang Cohen's So Long, Marianne. Bruce Johnson.
You know, it was that first album that just grabbed everybody's attention, and, you know, you just played it over and over again, and you just wondered who this guy was, you know, and he had short hair and he wore a tie. He didn't look like, you know, the pop star that you were used to.
Well, why do I feel alone?
Penina Armour.
He represents so much about just a kind of sensitivity to human nature, of who we are, of just a kind of just people who are connected to kind of understanding of what it means to feel pain and love and have an intellect about that, an appreciation for poetry and music.
So long, Marianne.
Megan Tiller and Melanie Slayball sang Cohen's Stories of the Street.
We are so small between the stars, so large against the sky.
Here's Justin Jones.
This is like the feel-good show of the fall right here.
He and Derek Kratzer performed If It Be Your Will.
And if it be your will that a voice be true.
The Hook and Bullet sang Did I Ever Love You.
Did I ever love you?
Audrey Barnes of Hook and Bullet.
To me, Leonard Cohen means songwriting and lyrics that are so poetic and interpretive. They have kind of an innate melancholy to them, but I think that that is something that we all experience.
Did I ever leave you? Was I ever able?
Jeremiah Jenkins with Justin Jones sang Cohen's Chelsea Hotel Number 2.
You got away.
Jeremiah Jenkins.
I found a lot of solace in his lyrics and his poetry and some of the darkness and the brokenness that's there, but also the light.
You got away, I never once heard you say.
Michael Bowman sang Cohen's The Gypsy's Wife.
Where is my gypsy wife tonight? I've heard all the wild reports, they can't be right. And who's here?
Trent Wagler.
Leonard Cohen is a Shakespeare, or maybe the Shakespeare of modern songwriting, at least for me. Of course, everybody's heard of Shakespeare, everybody talks about Shakespeare, but actually getting deep into the words and deep into the art that is every single syllable feels like Cohen put that kind of effort into songs and poetry that just allows you to continue to just dive deeper and deeper into songs that you think you knew and you think you understood. It just lays me flat to be able to kind of peel back the layers of such a short little pocket of time and rhythm. Yeah, he's a real inspiration.
And others joined Wagler on Passing Through.
Passing through, yeah. Sometimes happy, sometimes blue. Glad that I ran into you. Till the people that you saw me passing through.
For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer Kurtz.
Former Secretary of State and last year's Democratic candidate for president, Hillary Clinton, provided the closing remarks of the University of Virginia's two-day Women's Global Leadership Forum last Tuesday afternoon as part of the university's bicentennial commemoration. Topics included sexism in politics and in the workplace, but also the protection of democracy in the U.S. WMRA's Marguerite Gallerini has more.
A standing ovation from a majority female audience welcomed the 2016 Democratic candidate. Hillary Clinton talked about the challenges and double standards women leaders face in their professional lives and about how to stand their ground even if they're the only woman in the room.
Be prepared to speak up. And I was asked the other day, well, what do you do when you're in a meeting and maybe you're the only woman there and you express an idea and nobody pays attention to you? And then, 10 minutes later, a man at the same meeting expresses the same idea. What do you do? Well, look, I think you can say, I am so glad John heard me.
She also addressed new threats, including those she says the Trump administration is ignoring, such as the national security threat posed by the Russian interference with last year's election. Clinton also cited the leadership of Virginia's outgoing governor.
One area that I want to give, another shout out to Terry is when Virginia saw what everybody saw, that our voting machines could be hacked so easily, Virginia decided to move to paper ballots. More states need to do that. Our voting machines are not safe and secure. Voter suppression is a tactic meant to shrink the electorate. If you cannot win a fair fight in an election, you don't deserve to win.
Clinton did not mention the recent controversy within her own party over allegations that the Democratic primary selection process was unfair. But she did mention the challenges that face voters in sifting through information and news and the danger of alternative facts to democracy.
There is no such thing as an alternative fact. Those of you who study history know that trying to blur the line between fact and fiction is what dictators and authoritarians do. They want you to see the reality they want you to see. We can't let that happen.
For WMRA News, I am Marguerite Gallerini.
Charlottesville hosts a major university, student housing, residential areas, and, of course, businesses, large and small, serving all of them and suffering from growing pains. WMRA's Peter Jump looks at this juggling act of development along West Main Street, the corridor between the university and the city's downtown.
In the Oscar-winning documentary March of the Penguins, adult penguins travel hundreds of miles in unison, enduring extreme cold to reach breeding grounds and then feed and protect their young. The university end of Charlottesville's West Main Street is less than a half mile long, but it's a bustling half mile as construction cranes march along, erecting shiny medical buildings, upscale hotels, and luxury apartments that promise undergraduates, quote, lavish living featuring poolside cabanas. Charlottesville's March of the Cranes, expanding the university's footprint, has not gone unnoticed by local officials and residents, including many who want to see a more balanced approach to development at the other end of West Main, the half mile of the street closest to downtown. In 2012, the city created a panel of stakeholders to advise on urban design. Out of that grew a streetscape improvement plan for the 12 blocks at the downtown end of the street. Blue Wheel Bicycles owner Scott Paisley was a frequent participant in the process. While he laments the large-scale construction near the university, he praises City Councillor Kathy Galvin and others for recognizing the need for the city's oversight to catch up with the changes on West Main.
So the streetscape of West Maine is sort of a secondary consideration. The process began with, I think, a lot of input from the Place Design Task Force and Kathy Galvin, with the recognition, with all of the permits being put in for these large structures like the Flats, the Standard, et cetera, that West Main Street was going to change radically. And the code for the city of Charlottesville was not up to dealing with the scale of what was being proposed. And we see developing now a series of structures that can create a terrible canyon effect for West Main Street.
The portion of West Main covered by the plan is in the Star Hill neighborhood. Brad Worrell is a 13-year resident. While concerned about large-scale development, he praises efforts to repurpose buildings, such as the classical revival-style railroad station built in the 1880s and the Main Street Market, formerly a car dealership.
Some of the smaller buildings, even some that I don't particularly like aesthetically, are contributory to the visual landscape. And I think that some of the development over the last 15 years that has really incorporated existing buildings, repurposing buildings that have some unusual elements, has been a real positive. And raising buildings to put up six-story hotels is to our architectural and cultural detriment.
Charlottesville City Council approved the streetscape improvement plan in March 2016 and approved a design plan in May of this year. The $31 million project covers a 12-block long section of the street and includes stormwater improvements, the burying of utility lines, more trees and better bike lanes, and a new road configuration at the east end of the street, the end closest to downtown, will create a public plaza, at the center of which will be the existing Lewis and Clark statue. One of the long-established businesses towards the east end of West Main is the Albemarle Baking Company. Owner Jerry Newman wants the street to be more open and businesses to be more visible, although he's already noticed many changes in the last few years, including the use of the street by people working at the university and its hospital.
Incrementally, there's been change. The change that's come has been a lot more foot traffic down the street. And that's really nice. And a lot of people that move back and forth from the east side of town that come to work over here. So the awareness of Main Street as a thoroughfare and a main artery are really alive. But it's started to go through a lot of changes architecturally and developmentally that promise to be good for business.
The goal of the streetscape design is to create, in the words of the plan's consultants, a more equitable approach to development for pedestrians, cyclists, and motor vehicles. Meanwhile, large-scale projects, including a six-story apartment building that will wrap around an existing diner, and across the street an upscale hotel with a rooftop bar, similar to those at the hospital end of the street, are now coming to the downtown end. Nearby business owners and residents are hoping these and other large projects will not endanger the pedestrian and cyclist-friendly neighborhood the streetscape plan calls for. Time will tell. For WMRA News, I'm Peter Jump.
A top priority for many refugees coming to America is to learn English, but the ability to convey their own stories takes more time. Last December, WMRA's Miranda Bennett went to an exhibit of their art to see how some refugees in Charlottesville are communicating through drawing.
At first glance, it looks like a pretty simple drawing of a house set in idyllic rolling countryside that a child might draw.
The wife drew a picture of their house in Aleppo, and she titled it My House Before the Bomb. And it has pink curtains, it has a garden, it's a very pretty picture.
But as Susan Patrick points out, this picture is just one in a pair of drawings by a wife and husband, Amina and Saadine, who are refugees from Syria.
And her husband drew My House After the Bomb. And in the middle of his drawing is a very realistic drawing of a hand grenade. And below it is an image of his house exploding with red, pink lines flying from the house and windows. And then there are two two bodies on the bottom of the picture, and they are in pieces. And he told me that these were his parents, and they died in his house.
Patrick organized an exhibit of these drawings and drawings by refugees from seven other countries who now live in Charlottesville. She's a retired art teacher who wasn't quite ready to quit teaching. So a few years ago, she began tutoring a refugee from Bhutan, and eventually she was volunteering in his English class.
I thought that the people in the English classes, the refugees, had a very rich background, rich experiences, but a very limited way to tell anyone in English about these experiences. So the plan was for them to draw memories from their home country. And I think they are showing us things in these pictures that we couldn't know any other way.
Those things include complex emotions about home, something most people have trouble articulating. But there's particular ambivalence among refugees who left their homes under difficult circumstances. Ola Mansour, her husband Ahmed Albunni, and their three children arrived in Charlottesville in June from Syria.
In my country, it was very good and very alive, easy, and everything was good. I like everything in my country.
In their drawings, you get a sense of life in Syria before the war began in 2011. From her husband's drawings of the beautiful streets in old Damascus, to the apple trees and the duck ponds that dot the Syrian countryside in her drawing. But Ola acknowledges that the drawings represent an idealized nostalgia for a beloved homeland that's unraveling after 5 years of fighting.
Everything in Syria is beautiful, but the war is kill everything.
So they apply to the United Nations for asylum, and they were among the 10,000 Syrian refugees accepted by the United States this fiscal year. With no family in the United States, the Bunnies were placed in Charlottesville because of the city's high employment rate and the low cost of housing. And Ola and her family are taking full advantage of the opportunities this city offers.
That is my dream. I complete my education in university. I study engineer in my country. I will study more English and learn more English because I want to complete my education.
The drawings by Ola, Ahmed, and the other refugees are simple because they aren't trained artists. But that rawness makes it easier for viewers to understand their meaning, like the drawings by Amina and Saadin of their house before and after the bomb.
And when someone sits down to draw, especially something from a personal experience, he's making a direct connection to the viewer, whereas a photographer is more removed from the thing he's photographing. But the person who draws or paints the image is actually expressing something about it. And he was expressing the horror of losing his house and his parents at the same time.
And Saadin's new country has just elected a president who ran on a promise both to suspend immigration from Syria and implement a registry for Muslims entering the United States. But Ola still believes that this is a country of fair laws, and Donald Trump's election hasn't changed her feelings about America.
We think maybe he don't do anything because the people of America are lovely. I think that. I don't know.
For WMRA News, I'm Miranda Bennett.
I'm Chanel Varani, and this is Our Island Universe. Disaster is a Greek word meaning bad star. Italians once believed that disease was caused by the influence of the stars. That's where our word influenza comes from. Could you pick up a newspaper today and not find a horoscope published? The notion that somehow the positions of the planets, the sun and the moon, with respect to the background stars, somehow can have an impact on our daily lives is known as astrology. And even though this idea has been thoroughly debunked and refuted, millions of Americans still consult their horoscope and may even make life-changing decisions based on what they read. Perhaps it's natural to think that somehow the planets affect our human character and fate. Our ancestors called the red planet Mars after the Roman god of war. He was a warrior, an instigator of violence,
quarrels, and destruction. Indeed, up until the 16th century, one could argue that astrology and astronomy were synonyms. But this notion that somehow our fate is intertwined with the planets and the stars above began to be refuted and dismissed by Johannes Kepler and Galileo, who used their keen insight to recognize that both planets and stars were obeying fundamental laws of nature that we can deduce. However, it doesn't take much study of astronomy to realize that astrology's bunk. After all, how can 12 astrological signs predict the future of the nearly 7 billion of us who now live on planet Earth? Moreover, these horoscopes are vague and make no prediction whatsoever. Making a prediction that someone else can either corroborate or contradict is a hallmark of science. It's how we've come so far in so short a time. The desire for us to connect with the cosmos is real, but we don't have to appeal to pseudoscience. We don't need to come up with fake stories that make that link. After all, the atoms in your body came from previous generations of stars that were born, lived, and died so that you can be here today. Make it count.
I am Chanel Varani, director of the John C. Wells Planetarium at James Madison University.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Klein May Realty, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joey Loving, Jenna Trettner, Nancy Barber, Pam and Jim Huggins, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg in Rockingham County. If you'd like to support our news coverage, go to WMRA.org, mouse over news, then click on News and Information Fund. All of our stories are archived on that website. Be sure to click a like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio, and you can follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. And here's a great way to keep up with local and statewide news each day with WMRA. Subscribe to our daily news podcast. It's called the WMRA Daily. When you're at our website, WMRA.org, just look for the black WMRA coffee mug with the yellow sticky note that says Daily on it. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.